Halfway through, they get up, they start going to Gethsemane, and so he has his prayer there, and then they come and they arrest him, and then they drag him around all night. So we're back now on Friday morning, and he is being adjudicated here in chapter 27 before Pilate, and then he is taken to the praetorium where the soldiers mock him and they scourge him. And so what happens is that he is crucified finally about 9 o'clock that morning, or Friday morning. And they find him guilty according to Roman law. And he was crucified on Friday around 9 a.m. in the morning. And we find from Mark 15 that there was darkness from the sixth hour. Let's go to Mark 15 and verse 33. It's helpful to kind of put some of these things into the time clock. In verse 33, Mark 15, when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the land until the ninth hour. That's basically from noon. The Jews started their clock at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the sixth hour will be noon. And so there was this darkness over the whole world until the ninth hour, until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And then down in verse 37, Jesus cried out with a loud voice and breathed his last. And so Friday afternoon, around 3 o'clock or so, Jesus died. And he gave up his ghost. Then on Friday evening, Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus came to Pilate and said, could we have the body of Jesus? Because the next day was the Sabbath day, a high Sabbath day. They didn't want to leave the bodies on there. Of course, they had already come and broken the legs of the two thieves, robbers that were there. They came to Jesus, obviously found that he was already dead. The centurion took a spear and drove it into his heart, and water and blood came out. So we know that Jesus was dead. And so he died about 3 o'clock, hung on the cross for a few hours. And so Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus took the body down. And I wish I could spend some time. How much time y'all got? To me, that's one of the most remarkable stories that we don't talk about. That you're Nicodemus, you're Joseph of Arimathea, and you come to the cross, and the Roman soldiers take the body of Jesus down. It is emancipated. It is filthy. It is just a horrific condition. And they pull the nails out and they just hand that body to you. And they carry, I'm sure that they had servants, but they carry the body of the Son of God, who is dead, away from Golgotha, and they take him to Gethsemane, or the tomb where Joseph has a brand new tomb, and they bring it in, and they bring about 75, 80 pounds of spices. It was in the custom of the Jews, and they would wash the body. I just want to stop and just think about that for a moment. You know, you're Nicodemus and whatever, and you're washing the body of Jesus, and you wash his face, and you pull his hair back, and you just wash him, and then you try to, you know, they can't do it all in one night. And they wrap him in the burial cloths. They wrap his face in a burial cloth. And they put him there in the tomb. And then they create this big old stone, and they roll it, you know, there and seal the tomb. Just what that must have been like for Nicodemus and Joseph and those involved in it and so forth. And so Friday afternoon, Jesus is dead, but by Friday evening, he's in a tomb. And the disciples, what are they doing? You'll notice, interestingly enough, that it is Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus who come take the body of Jesus and go. It's not one of the 11. Judas has gone and killed himself, but it's not one of the 11. And so how did they respond to this whole thing? Well, that's kind of interesting too, because back in Matthew chapter 26, we find that the disciples, when he is arrested in Gethsemane, that when he is arrested, they forsook him. And they ran from him. Now, the reason is a good one, in a sense, because of the fact that when somebody's arrested like that, guess who else they arrest? anybody standing around this person, anybody who's one of his followers. And so here's these 11 men, and they're kind of around Jesus, and all of a sudden they arrest Jesus, and they think, they're coming for us too. And so they bail, with the exception of Peter and John. Peter and John followed Jesus at a distance. You remember the whole story about Jesus telling Peter that he was going to deny him three times when they came into the place of Caiaphas. And it's John, actually, that is known by the servants. And it's John, actually, that kind of introduces Peter to the crowd and ushers him in. And that's when Peter denies knowing Jesus and having anything to do with it. But the disciples, when Jesus is arrested, and when obviously they see and know that he's dead, are scared to death. Now, at the cross, John is there. Mary, the mother of Jesus, is there. A number of women are there. Okay, got to do another story. I mean, let's talk. Seriously. Mary, the mother of Jesus, is standing right there while her son has been ravagely beaten. He's been scourged. He is just in a horrible shape. He's filthy. Crucifixion is a nasty thing. There is nothing glorious about a cross. There's nothing glorious about crucifixion. One of the most horrific kinds of things. And his mother is standing right there. And you know what's amazing about that story? She said nothing. You know what I would have done if I'd have been there? I said, what do you think you're doing? That is the Son of God. I know. Mary knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that Jesus was the Son of God because she conceived him in her womb through the virgin birth. And she said nothing. I don't know how she did that. And then, you're getting a lot of freebies tonight, I don't know. The thing that really amazes me is that Jesus, in the center of all of humanity's salvation, in the scheme of redemption, when God has brought everything to bear to show the glory and the power of God through the death of Jesus Christ, Jesus stops everything. He stops and says, hold on just a minute. And he looks at his dear mother and he says, woman, behold you. Now that's not an insult. Do you know what he was saying? He says, Mom, I love you and thank you. Then looked over at John and said, would you take care of my mama? That's how we say it in the South. Please take care of my mama. Wow. Well, what are the other disciples doing during this time? Well, John's there. I'll give him the credit. And John 20 and verse 19, then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, they were scared to death. They were hiding. They were scared that they were going to get arrested and maybe they were going to be crucified along with them. And so they didn't want anything to do with Jesus. They forsook him and they hid in fear. And they were afraid. Well, then Jesus, as we just said, that they were in the doors that were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews. Jesus came and stood in the midst of them and said, peace be with you. Boy, that had to scare the bediddles out of them. There's Jesus. But then the remarkable thing is that how did they respond to the resurrection? Back in Mark's account in chapter 16, they didn't even believe that. You know, on the first day of the week that Mary Magdalene came and there were those who had seen Jesus and they came and told the disciples, Jesus is alive. And it's like, no, he can't be. Mark 16, verse 14, later he appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table and he rebuked their unbelief and the hardness of the hearts because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen. They came and said, we've seen Jesus. He's alive. No, he's not. Yeah, no, we've talked. No, you know you didn't. Doesn't that frustrate you when you see something and say you didn't see that and it's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. And so the disciples, they didn't even believe. And then, of course, they still just could not believed their eyes. Luke 24 and verse 36, that as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said to them, "Peace to you." But they were terrified and frightened and supposed that they had seen a spirit. Even when Jesus appears to them, they're thinking, "Oh, he's not real. Okay, don't look, because this is a spirit. It's kind of like a ghost." They couldn't even believe what they saw with their own eyes. Luke 24, verse 37, they were terrified. They were frightened. Verse 38, Jesus says to them, "Why are you troubled? Why do doubts arise in your hearts? Behold my hands, my feet, that it is myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see it." And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and feet. But while they still did not, listen, but while they still did not believe for joy and marveled, he said to them, "You got anything to eat?" I don't do it purposely, but I like to find humor in the Bible. That is funny. When he appears and says, "Here I am." "No, it's not you." "Oh, yeah, it is. By the way, I'm hungry. You got anything to eat?" That just shows that he is there. And so they gave him a piece of broil fish and some honeycomb, and he took it and ate in their presence. But the thing about it is that they still could not even believe what they were seeing. It was the third day, and they just could not believe what they were seeing. Why did Jesus rise on the third day? Well, we find out why the third day was chosen. Peter will later tell us that in Acts chapter 2 and in verse 27. Here he has explained to them that Jesus of Nazareth, the man who was a man attested by God, and he's fulfilling prophecies. He's fulfilled what David said. Verse 25, Acts 2, verse 25, David says concerning him, "I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is at my right hand that I may not be shaken. Therefore my heart rejoiced and my tongue was glad. Moreover, my flesh also will rest in hope. For you will not leave my soul in Hades, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You have made known to me the ways of life. You will make me full of joy in your presence." In one part, the reason that Jesus rose on the third day was because it was to fulfill prophecy. But the reason it needed to be on the third day to fulfill prophecy is because David said in the Psalm that Jesus would not see corruption. What that means is that in the Jewish custom, when somebody died, they were buried that day. But then they would spend about 3 days with them. And it was kind of like what used to be in the old days. They would have a wake, or they would bring a body maybe into the home, and they would have it in the living room or somewhere, and they would care for the body for about 3 days, and then they would bury him, and they would, you know, have their time with the family. And so what would happen is that they would bury this person, but then they would spend 3 days with them. And then they would shut the tomb up, or they would bury them before the fourth day, because that's when, and I'm not going to gross you out because it grossed me out, that's when the body begins to identify itself as dead. Our problem with science is the fact that we know from an anatomical level that death happens and the body begins to decay and so forth. But it doesn't show evidence until the fourth day. And that's the corruption. Jesus had to rise on the third day so that his body literally would not experience that corruption. Where did that corruption come from? It came because of a penalty of sin. And so he had to rise on the third day because David, not only prophesying, said that he would not allow his Holy One to see corruption. And so the third day was the central theme of Jesus' teaching. I've got to rise on the third day. And what happens to me kind of remarkably is that how many times Jesus told them, "I've got to rise on the third day." There's just a lot of reasons why that's got to happen. Matthew 16 and in verse 21, it says that from that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he, listen to this, he's going to go to Jerusalem, suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed and be raised the third day. The third day. He says that. "I'm going to Jerusalem. These guys are going to do some terrible things to me, and they're going to kill me, but that's okay, because on the third day, I'm going to rise." In Matthew 17, verse 9, during the transfiguration, and what we remember, Peter, James and John are with him. And so Jesus there in verse 9 says, "Now as they came down from the mountain, Jesus commanded them, saying, tell the vision to no man until the Son of Man is risen from the dead." So he's telling them. Now, Moses and Elijah were talking to Jesus about his crucifixion. And Peter's there. I'm a lot like Peter. I have to admit, I relate to Peter because I open my mouth when I shouldn't. So Peter's looking there and he says, listen, we need to build three tabernacles, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and one for Jesus. Okay, somebody always asked, how did Peter know that it was Elijah and Moses? It's because they wore name tags. Did you not know that? People wonder whether we're going to know one another in heaven. Well, of course we are. We're going to wear name tags. They knew by divine inspiration that that was Moses and that was Elijah. But they heard what they were talking about, and they were talking about Jesus' death, which probably included, by the way, I'm going to raise on the third day. And Jesus tells them, don't tell anybody about this until I'm risen from the dead. You get that? Risen from the dead kind of a thing. And then later in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 17, they're going up to Jerusalem. And Jesus has taken the 12 disciples, the 12 apostles, he takes them off to the side, and he says to them, verse 18, Matthew 17, verse 18, Matthew 20, I'm sorry, Matthew 20, verse 18, Jesus says, behold, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and to the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him to the Gentiles to mock and scourge and to crucify, and the third day he will rise again. So I'm going to Jerusalem, and by the Gentiles he means the Romans. And he tells them again, a lot of bad things are going to happen here because they're going to mock me and they're going to scourge me. He knows the scourging is coming. Boy, wait till we talk about that one day. And he knows all of that is going to happen. And then he says, and by the way, on the third day I'm rising. Matthew 26 and verse 32, Jesus, we go back to verse 31. Jesus tells them that all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. And then there's some other passages you can look at, Mark 10 and Mark 14, Luke 9. So here's your test for tonight. What day is Jesus going to be raised on? Third day. I mean, how many times have they taught this? Now, what we find, though, is, we're still in Matthew, go back to chapter 17, an interesting reaction. How did they react to this news sometimes? And it seems to be sometimes they were just kind of oblivious to it. But in verse 22 of Matthew 17, he tells them, the Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men. They would kill him, and the third day he would be raised up. And they were exceedingly sorrowful. Okay. I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, that's terrible. You're going to die. They're sorrowful because he's going to rise from the dead? Did you not get that message? It's sorrowful to hear that somebody's going to die, but he says that, okay, I'm going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They're going to kill me, but that's okay. I'm going to rise because that means he's going to be alive. And so they were sorrowful. In Mark the 8th chapter, you know, Peter always wanting to be the boss and be in charge and at large. And in Mark chapter 8, you remember Jesus does this again. He began to teach them. Mark chapter 8, verse 31, he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things, be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and scribes, be killed, and after 3 days, rise again. He spoke this word openly. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when he turned around and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, get behind me, Satan, for you're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. So Jesus is teaching them death, burial, resurrection, death, burial, resurrection, death, burial, resurrection. Peter takes Jesus off to the side. And rebuking is not nice. He is treating Jesus disrespectfully. And one of the things that's important in Bible study is the camera work. And so here's Jesus and Peter, and they're in this discussion. And then the camera turns to where Jesus is looking at his disciples and saying, "Get behind me, Satan," talking about Peter, "because you're not mindful of the things of God." The resurrection was according to the will of God. It was not going to be a fluke. It was God's will that he be raised from the dead. In Mark chapter 9 and verse 30, yes, granted, they didn't quite get this. They departed from there, passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know it. He taught his disciples and said to them, "The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men. They will kill him, and after he is killed, he will rise on the third day." But they didn't understand. They did not understand this saying and were afraid to ask him. Well, that offers a little bit of clarity because he keeps telling them, "I'm going to rise on the third day," and they just don't get it. They just don't understand. The same thing even later in verse 43. The whole sequence of events here over and over and over again is that he keeps telling them that this is going to happen and they just don't understand. Luke 18, Matthew, Mark, Luke 18, and verse 31. Don't expect something new. We're still going to say the same thing. In this case, notice the camera, he takes the 12 aside, including Judas. I always like to add that. This is Judas, too. He takes the 12 aside and says to them, "Behold, we're going up to Jerusalem, and all things that are written by the prophets concerning the Son of Man will be accomplished. He will be delivered to the Gentiles, be mocked and insulted and spit upon. They will scourge him and kill him, and the third day he will rise again." But they understood none of these things. This saying was hidden from them, and they did not know the things which were spoken. So what's happening here is that they did not understand, and really what is happening, and it's running counter to everything that they understood about Jesus and about the kingdom. And the other part, I think, also has to do with the fact that they could not comprehend what this really meant. And it could be as well, and I think it could be inferred in this passage, that God is hiding this from them, because you know that when, and who gave Peter a sword? What person in their right mind gave Peter a sword? They're in the Garden of Gethsemane. They come to arrest Jesus. What does Peter do? I don't think he meant to cut that man's ear off. I think he's a fisherman that needs to stay in his lane. Do you know how fishermen really hadn't got a lot of good sense? I'm going to have a lot of fun with fishermen. But I mean, Peter was, he was trying to fight for his Lord. He's going to fight. And that's why Jesus rebuked him, because they could not fully grasp the total picture of God's salvation, about what all that would mean. And so, yes, that Jesus was saying something that they just could not really grasp in its fullness, even when he stood before them. But not only that, we have to add that he also had told them, when the Jews were looking for a sign, he said, "I'll give you a sign." And here's part of this numerology thing. We read the story of Jonah, and he was in the belly of the great fish for 3 days and three nights. Well, doesn't that fit a pattern? I love the way that God intertwines his New Testament will into the Old Testament stories. And so what Jesus says, there's no signs going to be given except the sign of Jonah. For as Jonah was in the belly of the great fish for 3 days, so the Son of Man will be. And so he's telling his disciples, he's telling the whole world, "I'm going to be there for 3 days, and that's going to be in. There's going to be more to that." And then, of course, the other one is when he says in John chapter 2, the Jews answered and said, "What sign do you show us?" And he says, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will rise it up." Now, what he said was that, "You kill me, I will raise in the third day. They thought he was talking about the temple itself. And they said, "How can that be? We've been building on this thing for 46 years. Herod did a lot of building on that temple. It was the second temple. And this really became the passages are there for your reading as well. This became the foundation of the charges against Jesus when he was before Pilate. Well, he said he was going to tear the temple down, and that just can't be done. And so, and they actually hurled this insult against Jesus when he was on the cross. Oh, you said you're going to tear the temple down and build it in 3 days. Well, let's see what you're doing now. You know, and of course. But again, he's talking about his resurrection. In 3 days, I'm going to be raised from the dead. So the teaching of the third day is not an unknown subject to these people. It's very well known. It was so well known that it worried the Jewish leaders. In Matthew 27, what we find is that after he had died and they had buried him, the Jewish leaders, the ones who actually had orchestrated his death, got to thinking. They picked up on it. They were all sitting around commiserating about what they had accomplished, and they said, you know, he taught a lot about rising on the third day. Oh, he didn't mean that. Yeah, there's something about that, because one of the things that they never did in the whole ministry of Jesus, never once did they ever deny a miracle of Jesus. Now, they denied his teaching. They attacked his authority, and they tried to discredit him. But there was never an occasion that they said, that did not happen. And so I think that they were sitting around thinking that, you know, Jesus talked about this resurrection thing and that he said that after 3 days I will rise again. So we might want to take care of that situation just in case. Matthew 27, verse 62. On the next day, which followed the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together to Pilate, saying, Sir, we remember while he was still alive how that deceiver said, after 3 days I will rise. Therefore command that the tomb be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away and say to the people, he is risen from the dead. So the last deception would be worse than the first. And Pilate said to them, you have a guard, go your way, make it as secure as you know how. And so they went out and made the tomb secure, sealing the stone and setting the guard. They worried about it. Jesus rising from the dead. Now, when Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus had sealed the tomb, they just rolled the stone. What the Jews did under the Romans is they took wax or whatever and they put a literal seal on it, and then they put elite Roman guards out there. These were not your Boy Scouts. These are the really big, these are the really tough guys. And so they were concerned. They feared the words of Jesus would come true. They really did worry about that. Well, of course, we know that, the women came to the tomb and the two angels were there, and whom do you seek? He's not here. But you'll notice in Luke's account that the angels remind the women of what Jesus said. Luke 24, down in verse 5. The ladies were afraid, they bowed their faces to the earth, and they said to them, why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but is risen. Here it is. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified and the third day rise again. Remember that? Oh, yeah. He's not here because that's what he said. And even later in Luke 24, when he's with those men on the way to Emmaus, and down in verse 17, it says that Jesus says to them, what kind of conversation is this you have with one another as you walk and are sad? See, they're sad. Then one of them whose name was Cleopas answered and said, are you the only stranger in Jerusalem? Have you not known the things which have happened in these days? And he said to them, what things? And they said to him, the things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. And yes, certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early astonished us. When they did not find his body, they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb, Peter and John speaking of them, and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. Wow! So, I mean, they're like, it's the third day we thought we'd see him. Peter and John had been to the tomb and come back. And then when Jesus actually appears to the disciples, Luke 24, down in verse 36, and when he had said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said, peace to you. And they were terrified and frightened and supposed that they had seen the Spirit. And then he rebukes their unbelief. They just couldn't figure it out. And how many times he told them, I'm going to rise on the third day. So why did the disciples have such a hard time hearing what Jesus said? Sometimes it's because we listen with preconceived ideas and we don't hear what God says. And that's amazing how that happens. In Acts 1, we're talking 40 days later after the resurrection of Jesus. Jesus is standing there with the 11 getting ready to ascend to the Father, and they said, well, are you going to restore the kingdom now, you know, again? Will you at this time restore the kingdom to Israel? I mean, Jesus has got to be shaking his head thinking, seriously? I've been with you for nearly 3 years. I just spent 40 days with you, and you're still asking whether we're going to... But see, their preconceived ideas clouded their thinking, and they can't see the truth. Years ago, I was having a Bible study with a woman by the name of Linda Smith. She was an invalid who lived in a bed. And kind of an amazing thing, but she was completely invalid, but she had these little oven things beside her, and she fixed her own food. She had caretakers. And I went and had Bible studies with her. And we got to baptism. We talked about this morning. And I said, you know, the Bible says the baptism saves you. She said, no, it doesn't. I said, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. No, I wouldn't really do it like that. And I said, well, of course it does. She said, no, it doesn't. I said, okay. And so I turned to 1 Peter 3:21. And I handed it to her. And I said, read this. So she read it. There is any type which now also saves you, not the renewal of the filth of the flesh. And her mouth literally dropped open. I'm standing there watching her, and she read the passage, and her mouth literally fell open. And then she recomposed herself. She said, the Bible doesn't teach it. Close the Bible. Preconceived ideas. And so often when we talk to people, they have these preconceived ideas that they will not allow them to hear what God said. And I think for a lot of purposes, of course, that God was keeping this in the shadows with them so they would not fully, but they could not understand and grasp the fact that Jesus was going to die, and on the third day they should be happy because they should be standing around waiting, saying, Lord, where are you? Because you said you were coming on the third day. And when Jesus makes a promise, he doesn't break it. But they allowed this whole kingdom thing to cloud their minds. Because Jesus told them multiple times he would rise on the third day so that later, when they believed in the resurrection, his word would be confirmed. In John chapter 2, this is kind of a little sidebar that John gives us early in his gospel. In John chapter 2 and in verse 19, kind of sets the tone for really the gospels. And so John 2, verse 19, Jesus answered and said to them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then the Jews answered, it has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you will raise it up in 3 days. But he was speaking of the temple of his body. Verse 22, therefore, when he had risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he said this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. So they really sat, when they finally figured it out, they said, wow, we feel a little foolish that Jesus told us over and over and over and over and over and over again that Jesus, he was going to raise on the third day. And he did. And that just confirms the validity of God's word. They remembered it. And they believed the words which Jesus said. And I think it goes without saying that there's a purpose to every story in the Bible. The book of Jonah is just not a fish tale. It's a great story that, you know, it's about an angry preacher who wanted God to destroy all these good people. But it's also a story that helps us understand Jesus, because the Old Testament is about the third day. We have to study the Old Testament and understand it's got Jesus written all over it. And Jesus on the third day. And then finally, even unbelievers believe. The people that put Jesus to death believe, you know, he might rise on the third day. And so they set that guard to assure them. And they bribed the guards to tell the story that the disciples came and stole the body. And that was a story that went on for years and years. But it did not happen. The thing about the third day was that it was the event that brought about the first day. Because, brethren, if we didn't have the third day, we wouldn't have the first day. You know why we gather today on Sunday? This is the first day. Do you know why? Because this was the third day. Jesus rose from the dead. It's not just so much about the supper as it is important to do that. But this is what Jesus told the 11 that they would do. That they would go to Jerusalem and that they would preach the gospel of the third day, and that that gospel would be the message of the death and the burial and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The very essence of baptism, the very essence of salvation, the very essence of grace and mercy and love and all the things that God has given us to do is on the third day. Because if Jesus did not rise on the third day, our faith is in vain. Now, we are just miserable people, Paul says. But thank God for the third day, because on that third day means that he rose from the dead. And what's important about Romans chapter 6, and I'll say this carefully, and please listen to how I say this. When Jesus comes back on the day of judgment, he's not looking for baptized people. He's looking for resurrected people. Romans 6 talks about that we were buried with him through baptism into death. Just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in newness of life. For if we have been united together in the likeness of his death, that's baptism, certainly we also shall be in the likeness of his resurrection. Because ultimately what the third day means to me is the fact that when I die, I can go be with God and be resurrected with him. Or if he comes back before I die, we get to resurrect with him, because the miracle of the resurrection is that there is life after death. And that's what we need to live for. I live for the third day, when I can rise like Jesus did and live forever. But that is found in the waters of baptism, as we talked about this morning. That is found in the obedience of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That as many of us as were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into his death. Have you done that this evening? Be thankful for the third day. Thank God for his grace and his mercy. Think on these things as together we stand as we sing.